Thanks for your kind words, Si, and likewise, thanks for doing what we're providing today, Si, so turn about is fair play, so here we go. Well, brothers and sisters, just a few personal thoughts, really, before we start the exhortation proper. Things to think about during lockdown. And when we first came to the Bay, one of the things I really enjoyed about the Bay of Plenty Ecclesia was that you get to stay for lunch and enjoy time with brothers and sisters. We had a similar thing going in Whangarei, and personally for me that's quite special. And of course, no slant on your opinions, but these are my just some thoughts. And of course, you may have heard me say over the years a number of times that I believe food and fellowship are like hand in glove. They're a Bible-based principle, food and fellowship, and to share time together over the word and over food is a divine match, I believe. And I'm sure that over the last 2 or 3 weeks at least, when we've been able to meet together as groups of up to 10, that you've been able to enjoy fellowship in breaking the bread, and then enjoy fellowship again over a meal. And that's special. And of course the Bible abounds with examples in both Old and New Testament of where people meet together to share fellowship in both word and in food. So it's about hospitality, it's about unity, it's about celebrating, and it's about engaging, isn't it? That's what we come to do when we do these things. And so my thoughts then, at least the last few weeks, it's been for me a sort of tighter connection, but at the same time, you know, it seemed to be more relaxed. You know, go to meeting in the slippers if you wanted to. Not, you could do that now. It doesn't bother at all, does it? But it's just personal things that I notice, and I think going forward, how can we perpetuate this? How can we keep this feeling of a good experience and like a tighter fellowship going? And I know it's on the back of solitude, because meeting together to remember Jesus, even though we're surrounded by a virtual ecclesia, you're still solitary, aren't you? So we have this comparison between being able to meet together and not being able to meet together. And so each of you, I'm sure, have a different view on what made the last few weeks special for you. But how do we look at perpetuating that, as I say, to replicate it, to keep it special? Think about new ways of personally drawing closer to God and feeling closer to God. That's a key, both in Sunday worship and in time together. And I know Verity and Liz have come up with some nice suggestions about how we can do things a little bit differently and be encouraged together. And so let's think about that and talk about that, for sure. So, exhortation proper then. So, after talking about food, you probably won't be surprised that I'm going to talk about food and drink, particularly around one verse in the Sermon on the Mount. So if you don't mind, please, coming to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6. We know these words very well, and I'm not going to tell you anything that I'm sure you don't already know about this section of the Beatitudes. But I just want to dwell on just a few points that mean something to me. So Matthew 5 verse 6, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." Simple words of Jesus, and I'm sure you've heard many talks on the subject before. But if there's anything you can take home with you, one point that you can take from the exhortation is, what I think Jesus means by this is, he wants us to keep coming back. Keep coming back. To be hungry and thirsty, it's a very natural experience. I mean, our children are always hungry, we're hungry, and we're thirsty, and we keep coming back to food, don't we? And that's the intent, I think, Jesus is asking us. Keep coming back, looking for that to be filled. In many ways, I was born hungry, so I know all about food, and I know all about drink. I've been feeding myself now for 50-odd years, and that's no surprise. People think, well, you've been doing it for that long, do you need to do it anymore, Mark? And of course I do. If I don't, I'll die. So every day I'm looking for breakfast, I'm looking for lunch, I'm looking for tea, and I'm looking for any reason in between to eat and drink. You know? And Jesus wants us to be like that with him. It's take the feeling of hunger and thirst and put it there in this verse 6 to keep coming back. Every day he wants us to be out looking for his ways, his teachings, his direction of life, his word in my ear, his presence in my life. He wants me to keep looking for that, to desire it. Not in some sort of weird, you know, suit and tie sort of way, but in a natural sort of way. Just like we feel natural to go to the fridge, we take something out and we eat it. You know, a natural way we come to Jesus like that. When someone says, "Oh, I'm sure hungry," and mothers know what it is with their kids, "I'm sure hungry," or "Oh, I've got a powerful thirst," you know, we know exactly what we mean because we've been there ourselves. We know that, we understand that. And if I said the same about righteousness and wanting to be sinless and close to God, that's what Jesus is meaning here, I think, to come close to God. So, again, my point, I believe Jesus is asking us to keep coming back to him, to be natural and to be unashamed in our desire for his presence in our lives. So, just for the balance of exhortation, what I want to do is just unpick a little bit this verse 6 to draw out some aspects that will help us in our fellowship perhaps and in our encouragement. And when I look at verse 6, I see three sort of key words there. The word blessed, obviously hungering and thirsting, and righteousness. So just want to begin at the beginning as you do, verse 6 there, blessed. And it's the Beatitudes all start with that, don't they? Blessed. Another way of thinking about that word, it's sort of a Bible word, but to think about it in terms that we can perhaps understand, or I can understand, is to be congratulated. Jesus is saying, you are to be congratulated if you desire in God's ways. It's not as a boost to your ego. I think it's not what Jesus is saying at all. But rather to highlight what God is looking for in people. That's the right path you're taking. You're to be congratulated for that. A similar point is made in the conclusion of Matthew's Gospel. And if you just want to hold your finger in chapter 5 and come over to chapter 25. Be congratulated. And Jesus said the same in one of the last parables that Matthew records before the crucifixion, coming down to verse 34. In the parable, the king shall say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the earth. To be congratulated. The whole import of this parable of the sheep and the goats is it's a welcoming. Come, you know, congratulations, come in, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And I think that's the idea that Jesus is drawing out at the beginning of the gospel here in chapter 5. Well, back in verse 6 of chapter 5, we want to look then at this word righteousness. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. And again, another Bible word that can skim over my head at times. But whose righteousness, we might ask? Is it man's righteousness, my righteousness? Or is it God's righteousness that we're hungering and thirsting after? Well, it's sort of a loaded question, really, because in a sense, of course, we all look for personal righteousness, don't we? We want to be right with God. That's what righteousness means, being right with God. It's something that I pursue. Not so people can notice it, but because I want to be more and more like Jesus as the days go on. to be right with God, righteousness, to be counted sinless. That's the aspect of being right with God, sinless. Abraham, remember, he believed God, and God said, your belief, Abraham, I'm going to count that, I'm going to credit that as righteousness. Belief. And it was a wholehearted belief. He didn't just, oh yeah, that's right, okay, I can understand that. He totally endorsed everything that God said to him. He made it his own, and he believed it heart and soul. And God said, because of that, Abraham, you're a righteous man. So the key, of course, is who is noticing the righteousness. Is it me that's noticing my righteousness, or is it God that's noticing my righteousness? And of course, there's massive differences there. If you glance across the page in verse 20, Jesus says to the scribes and Pharisees and to the disciples, I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall in no case or no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven. You know, a disciple couldn't possibly exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees, or how they regarded it anyway. However, the simple act of belief and faith and desire, those three, for God in your life puts you in the kingdom, and the Pharisees there left out knocking on a door that's locked. Because it's God's righteousness that we're seeking, so that we might also be righteous in that sort of roundabout way. The Pharisee wanted to build his life on wanting to be noticed for his achievements and his acts of religious service. A disciple, we want to be noticed for acts of faith. Not the showy stuff, like the people on the right hand of Jesus in the parable we looked at in chapter 25. Well, when did I do that, Lord? I don't remember that. And it's not that they've got amnesia, it's because it's just a natural part of their life. You know, I do it every day. That's what I do. And Jesus noticed that. Come, bless my Father. So nothing showy, it's just living life naturally in God's presence. If we just come back a couple of chapters to the baptism of Jesus in chapter 3, there's another aspect of righteousness there that Matthew picks up for us. Matthew 3 verse 15, John, feeling very unsure and a little bit hesitant about baptizing such a one as Jesus. Jesus says to him, verse 15, and Jesus answering said to John, suffer it to be so now, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness. And then he suffered him. Both John and Jesus were fulfilling the righteousness of God and their own, together being made right with God. Together in faith and belief, we're going to do this, Jesus said. Okay, last point then, which we've already covered in some detail, this hunger and thirst. And really, this is a bit of a summary. To hunger and thirst. So let's be natural in who we are. Let's encourage one another. Through the working week, I tend to eat by the clock. You know, smoker comes, gobble your food down. Lunch comes, gobble your food down. But on the weekend or when there's no time constraints, I tend to eat when I'm hungry. And of course, there's a spiritual lesson in that, isn't there? We need to have set times in our lives. You set times, not that I set times for you. You have set times when you draw close to Jesus. I mean, 11 o'clock on a Sunday is perfect, isn't it? A set time that you might have to pray and to read, but there's also plenty of other times when you can just snack in that sense, you know, to do it when you want to. Jesus is always there. But again, the focus in summary is just keep coming back for it. He is able to help us to be filled. And our last quote then is in John chapter 6. probably no surprises for those that thinking about bread and food. Jesus' wonderful discussion with the multitudes about the manna and the bread of God. So we're going to look at verse 35 to 39 to finish, please. John chapter 6. Jesus said to the crowds, "I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that ye also have seen me, and believe not. All that the Father hath given me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out." And there's our little exhortation in there, isn't it, brothers and sisters? "I will in no wise cast out if you come to me. For I come down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which has sent me, that of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day." And have you noticed at the end of verse 39 there? He's going to raise it up again. So the resurrection that is coming has already started now, isn't it, brothers and sisters? What we're doing now is recreating people. God is recreating people now. He's recreating us. Let's come to Jesus. We know that he will in no wise cast us out.